I'm going to circle back around with her to still do an intro. Unless Andrew, you want to do the intro?
I mean, that sounds like fun.
Okay. All right.
But I mean, I like India's great. So I don't want to,
No, she'll get a kick out of it if one of you does the intro.
Definitely gonna need
coaching. Do you want to do the music part?
So you're gonna have to talk me through. I've listened to your most recent episode.
Okay, it's the same thing every episode.
This is
how it goes. Okay, and Mitch is gonna be like, "God damn, what the hell did I get into?" All right, so we don't have like a real intro song because. At Mitch, as you know, the show just makes fun of another show.
I just know the gist and the premise, but that's the extent of my knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. So the way that it normally goes is 10 tenths has like dun 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 something like that, and then like some drums. Yeah. and then our intro is burn up down 3 times.
Cool.
So sometimes some of our guests will do the noise stuff with me.
Andrew is much more musically inclined than I am. So,
you're pretty musical.
Do you want to do the whole thing, or you want to do part of it, Andrew?
I like that. I'm happy to do the ba-dum-ba-dum part. So it's ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum-ba-dum.
Yeah, look, you already got it. You can do the whole thing.
Freaking pro.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Here we go. Go. Ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum-ba-dum. You got two more. Ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum-ba-dum. Ba-dum-ba-dum, ba-dum-ba-dum. Welcome to 10 Tenths Podcast, where we talk tenths and make little sense. Today, I have Andrew Raines and Mitch Cobb. We did a thing together. Recently, and that's what brings us together. Andrew Raines, I guess we'll do a quick intro because not everybody knows who everybody is. Andrew Raines is a Pirelli World Challenge pro driver, and also you're the owner of Apex Pro.
Yeah, co-founder, president, owner, CEO, whatever.
Yeah. And then Mitch Cobb is a pretty rad dude. Who I don't completely understand all of his responsibilities. So Mitch, feel free to like fill in.
I do not understand either, but.
So in a former life, you were a mechanic at the Skip Barber Museum.
Okay. So first former life, I was a restoration tech at the, Barber Motorsports Museum in Birmingham, Alabama. Skip Barber. George Barber, they actually raced together back in the 60s. Not the same person. And then before that, about the same time really that Andrew was racing a little bit, I was doing like short track, roundy round stuff, super late models.
Okay.
So
cool. Okay. I'm sorry.
Washed up race car driver turned mechanic.
and just real quick, sometimes there's going to be like a weird delay between us, just like you would have any other online video chat. So we're going to stumble over each other sometimes. Andrew, you guys now have a thing called Birmingham Road and Race.
Yes.
And that is one, it's a prep shop. Two, is it a regular automotive shop?
Yeah. We're super client focused. So the answer to that question is if you are a client that goes to the racetrack and we work on your race car, we're happy to work on your street car, but we're not an oil change shop.
Got it. Okay. And Mitch, you're kind of the head mechanic of that, right?
Yeah. I'm the day-to-day in the shop, turning wrenches, dealing with customers, scheduling everything, ordering parts, etc.
Building race cars.
Okay.
Building race cars. Yeah. All of the above. Today, I was working on a Porsche Cayman and a 1977 International Scout. So, little bit of everything.
Variety.
Yeah. And just to kind of give some context of like the experience that you come from, you were telling me when we were hanging out that you've been to Goodwin, right?
Goodwood, the festival of speed, sorry. Not the revival. Yeah.
Okay. But that, and you actually drove it.
Yeah. So if you guys that are listening don't know what Goodwood Festival of Speed is, think like the biggest music festival you've ever imagined, but instead of like dance music or whatever, it's race cars. And so any incredible, cool, awesome race car you could imagine is at this like medieval estate in like southern England, or the south of England, I guess you say. I don't know.
The south of England.
And so I've been three times when I was with the Barber Museum. Got to take a John Surtees Ferrari Formula One car, the car that he actually won the championship in 64 with. I got to take a Dan Gurney Lotus 64 Indy car, and then a couple other not quite as notable pieces, but it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, so you actually like did the time trials.
Yeah, everyone gets to drive the same course. It's not, we didn't do like the competition side of things. It was just an exhibition, but you're still going up the same course the guys are competing on.
Yeah, with cars like that, were you included in some of the televised?
Yeah, stuff? so the whole thing is broadcast, whether it's live streamed or televised or whatever they do. Okay.
So you've both been videoed and broadcasted for your driving endeavors.
Yes.
That's an accurate statement.
Yes.
Yep, that's true. But Mitch is really modest about his late model racing because he did like super high level, like national level, super late model stuff. And he raced with like Bill and Chase Elliott's family and also tested the Formula BMW and did a lot of karting. So his credentials are like very steeped in the motorsports world. So I met Mitch and I was like, "You think you're qualified to run a shop?" And he was like, "I guess so."
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like there's a ton of stuff that we can cover, but we don't have all the time in the world. I would love to have both of you on your own back on the show. Talk about your own histories, but I feel like if we don't mostly concentrate on what we did together, this is going to be a very long episode.
Yes, sure.
But I at least wanted to like get some of like the stuff out there, so our listeners kind of have some frame of reference of like where you guys are coming from. So Mitch has done hella racing; he's driven some super rare cars and some incredible. Venues. He didn't even mention the driving at Indy.
Oh yeah.
That whole deal. Yeah,
that will we
that's a footnote.
Yeah,
apparently.
We can save that for the follow up episode.
Okay, cool.
I'm one of two people to drive a certain car at Indy and one of one that has not crashed a certain car. So
I think that's a cool story.
We'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah. I tried relaying that story to India, but like I'm so poor at that part of automotive history that it just came out like, you know, like when like a toddler or like when like a 5-year old tries to tell you a story and it's just like four sentences trying to get out at the same time. Yeah. That was me to India trying to explain what Mitch did. And she's just like, "John, I don't know what you're talking about." And I'm like, "It's not because of you, it's because of me." Yeah. And then circling back to Andrew a bit, do you want to kind of give like a, not to put you on the spot, but like just kind of a little rundown of like what Apex Pro is and why it's pretty rad?
Yeah, sure. Apex Pro is a device that you put in your car and connects to your phone. We have an app. It's also called Apex Pro, and it records data while you drive. So it's a data analysis tool. It also offers some real-time feedback while you're in the car. Kind of the shtick of Apex Pro that's different than everything else is it uses accelerometers and machine learning to understand basically where the performance edge of your tires are. Like, where is the car going to start to lose traction? And it's a lot simpler than it sounds. It sounds very complicated, but it's not quite that complicated.
Yeah. And I've seen it in action, and you're right. It's when it's in the moment, it's very
a little more
easy to interpret data.
Even I can use it, so.
Which is very 10 help.
I couldn't figure out how to get my microphone to work just now, but I can use
it. It didn't take you very long, to be fair. I googled it. Oh, okay.
I googled Zencaster microphone not working, and here we are.
Oh, okay. That's eight. As long as you know how to use Google, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much like 90% of IT work is just knowing how to use Google.
Super good Googling skills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put that on a resume.
So Apex Pro is how I know Andrew, because he was a sponsor for Time Trials National Tour. Mm-hmm. And I think we first met at Time Trials Nationals, the first one.
I think so. Yeah, I think we met.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, you were probably behind a grill or something.
Yeah.
we were definitely at NCM at TT Nats, and where I met India, too. I might have met India previously to that at some point. But
yeah, y'all probably spoke before it.
Probably so.
That, I would imagine.
I don't know the whole origin story there. That's like, that has its own Marvel storyline.
Yeah. You know, characters. Yeah, there's a lot of lore out there when it comes to motorsports.
Yeah.
Why are we all kind of talking and why is this episode relevant at all? So what happened was you guys, Birmingham Road and Race, Prep Shop, you are partnered with the rest of the guys on this car, or you are supporting the car? I don't exactly understand that relationship for Ginger Racing.
We don't either.
Like, okay.
Yeah. No, the long and the short of it is our business partner, John, owns the car, and he has
buddies
called Ginger Racing for reasons. And those buddies race this car, and Mitch and Birmingham Road and Race prep the car, and sometimes I show up and drive and help them go faster as well. And it happened to be one of those weekends where we all were there together.
Yeah. And for anybody that's not made the connection, because it took me a minute to make the connection, Birmingham Road and Race is based out of Birmingham, Alabama.
There you go. Not England.
Yeah. Those would be some expensive import fees. You're currently participating in World Racing League, which, as I kind of understand it, is kind of like a semi-pro endurance racing series for wheel-to-wheel racing. Their spiel on their website is like, this is affordable pro racing, but like, it's
not affordable. Like,
and it's not pro racing.
Well, that, but also like the lines between like high level amateur racing and like low level pro racing is super blurred. Yes.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause like you go to like a club racing weekend and like, you're going to see sometimes even more expensive rigs than what we saw at VIR.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, and like that is purely an amateur racing series for like the Hoosier Super Tour or like NASA's series. But like some of those people, like there's prep shops there and there's like people who are racing for like all the not sponsorships, but
contingencies.
The contingency, sorry. So like it kind of gets blurred into like semi-pro racing, you know. So those lines are, to me, are always kind of blurry. And like at the end of the day, like from my perspective, it's all kind of the same, you know, the same things are going on. Yeah. People show up, you got to get the car on track. You got to make it go around and do the best you can.
Yep. Don't get hit. Don't hit anybody else.
Yeah. And the quality of equipment and the resources you have is entirely budget dependent. And either you can completely finance that yourself or you can get other people to finance it. And doesn't matter who gives the money, that doesn't dictate whether it's professional or amateur from how I've seen it over the years.
Agreed.
You know,
Mitch and I subscribe to the OPM method, which is other people's money.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys had a endurance race weekend at Virginia International Raceway. The reason that I'm involved is that you guys put out a help wanted post online saying you needed a guy to come help with like fueling and mechanical stuff. And I was like, guess what?
In those tents.
I just moved here. Yeah. So that seemed to work out pretty well. So that's why I was with you guys. You guys are pretty much are like doing
the real reason,
doing the full endeavor for the season, right?
The real reason you were with us is because after we all met you at NOLA and you cooked the rock and gumbo. So when Andrew was like, hey, John, remember John?
Remember the gumbo?
He responded, and I'm like, he's in. Done. I don't know what his capabilities are whatsoever, but
yeah,
we'll take him.
Yeah. That was with Factor Fab, which is the 10-10s guys.
10-10s, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, you've had a long relationship with them, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you're a sponsor of that show. Are you still?
That's true. I'm not sure if I'm, like, violating some sort of unwritten contract or something.
They're going to drop your segment. Yeah, they're going to
screw that guy.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say about that.
Good dudes. I love Adam and Robbie. They're awesome. Robbie is racing.
Oh yeah. I love them. And that was the thing with that event was they just got a brand new car. Some of them haven't done any endurance racing. Robbie had just done like a couple of road racing events at that point. Yeah. Booney has had plenty of endurance racing experience at that point. But they're like, brand new car. People haven't done endurance racing. It's a track none of us have ever been to. And I was like, yeah, I'm like an hour away. I'm going to come help you guys because shit's going to hit the fan. That's just how it goes when you have that many variables.
Absolutely.
And like, that's nothing to like speak poorly of them. That's just racing.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of parts runs that weekend.
Bought some parts.
Yeah.
Best parts run in Danville, which I don't think we've even mentioned that VIR is in the lovely Danville, Virginia area.
Yeah, that's a whole nother tangent we'll have to get into probably later on. So you guys are from what I was able to pull from like looking at previous results and stuff like that, y'all are going for like a full season, right? For WRL with this car and team.
Unintentionally, yeah, we've ended up running with, so Ginger Racing is mostly a group of guys based out of Texas. John, who owns the car that you helped us with, he's local here in Birmingham, and they have the car that lives in Texas has done most of the Midwest Championship races. And then our car that's here in Birmingham has done most of the East Coast Championship races. And we've kind of inadvertently found ourselves in second place in the championship, even though we haven't really been focusing on the championship. And so we're like, oh, this is cool. But now we're not even sure if we're going to be able to make it to the next round at Sebring, the final round of the championship. So. We'll see how that ends up. But yeah,
part of doing really well in a season is just showing up to get the points.
Yeah. WRL does, I'm not sure the exact number, they do a couple drops. So like your 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, worst results of the season, they drop. And I don't even know if that's happened yet or not. So I have no idea how the championship will shake up, but.
So y'all been running under the same car number? You've ran it two different cars?
No, so the car that you helped us with at VIR is the number 47, and the other car that lives in Texas is the 46.
Okay, which one was at NOLA?
Both were at NOLA.
Oh, okay.
The 46 spectacularly grenaded its motor.
Okay, that's the one that blew up. I remember y'all having some mechanical issues on something, but and that there was a lot of time being spent under the car.
Yeah. decided to put a junkyard motor in that car after we had done a fresh rebuild on ours. And we were like, you know, if you know anything about BMW S54s, junkyard motor is not the way to go.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why. There's consequences.
They lost the motor on Saturday. Put it on Saturday?
I guess so.
I think it was Saturday. They lost motor on Saturday. When it got back to the paddock on the rollback, the oil pump was sitting on the splitter. The motor blew up so bad that it shot the oil pump through the grill and was sitting on the splitter in front of the bumper.
Exterior to the car.
it was a good one. It was a good one.
That's pretty impressive.
That's a blammo.
Just on power, fifth gear, front straightaway, kaboom.
That's a big straightaway at NOLA.
Yeah.
Big.
And like, if you have like a, I guess like engines that are more prone to like getting like damage while being wrung out, that's probably one of the worst tracks for that because the front straight's so bumpy.
Oh yeah.
That like, if you have like a really tuned up car, all those bumps and modulations are going to ring out the motor and make it
that
flutter a bunch.
Yeah.
Now, like I run a junkyard motor in my car and that thing just takes it. It's a pig.
Yeah. There's a big difference. So like the S54 is the naturally aspirated, whatever, 3.2 liter, six cylinder that's an E46 M3 era BMWs. And it's, you know, at the time it was like the highest output naturally aspirated engine and whatever the motor is that's in the S2000 were like crazy high output for their displacement. You know, it makes like 333 horsepower from 3.2 liters naturally aspirated. So from the factory, they're like super highly strung. So like, once they get high mileage and all the stuff starts to wear, like they usually kind of fail. Like that's why you rebuild them as opposed to some of the, like the motor that's in your car probably is a lower compression.
Right.
Kind of more like,
oh yeah. Yeah. It's totally motor. Different. It's a motor made to be mated with a CVT.
Yeah.
You know, so like lawnmower. Way different expectations out of the two.
It's like, why do I have Hoosiers on this car?
Yeah.
Very confused. Whereas the S54 is like, I can sense cheap tires.
Yeah.
You know, it's like snooty. It's like a snooty German.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are those takeoffs? I don't do stickers on
stickers. Yeah. We need
preference. Okay. So going into the VIR event, like, did y'all have like any kind of game plan, or was it kind of just like, let's show up and see how it goes? Had y'all, I think Andrew, you said you'd been to VIR before.
Yeah, I've been to VIR a couple of times.
Okay. Mitch, had you been
there? Yeah, we raced the same car in a much, much different configuration last year. So this is my
second. Okay. So you both been there. You both raced there. So coming back to it with this car, were y'all, did you have a game plan? Like, was there anything?
Yeah. So
kind of going through your minds
with Andrew joining us, that helps the driver lineup average pace quite a bit. Normally with this group of guys, there's six, seven people that are all kind of involved, and you know, everyone's trying to drive, everyone's trying to help, everyone's trying to do everything, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but can cause you to stumble a little bit. So this weekend there was only, since you were able to come help, there was only five of us, which is the amount of people we need for a pit stop, which is why we you know, reached out and you ended up helping us.
Yeah.
And then and
only four drivers. Only
four drivers.
Because you don't, Mitch.
I don't drive. I stay behind the wall, run the program. Okay. The first couple of races of the year I drove, and it's just too much for me to prep the car, work on the car, drive, you know, run the show all weekend, whatever. So I've kind of stepped out of that.
And I think I was talking to India about that sort of thing a week or two ago, about when you get to the pointy end of pretty much any level of car racing, if you're trying to go like for first place at like divisional or national levels, like you need, like, you're not doing it on your own.
No.
You need support. Yeah. Sure. And you have, like, it's going to take a tribe to get you there. Whether it's people volunteering or you're hiring people, whatever that situation may be, like if it's a prep shop or it's your family or something, but like even like solo nationals, like it's very rare for just like some dude to show up with nobody helping him and just clean house in a class that's really competitive, you know? And then same thing for like any of the big road racing championship events.
It's a huge effort.
And I kind of compare those to WRL events because like in a single race, you put an entire season of sprint racing in a day on the car.
Yeah. Or,
you know, so
the WRL weekends, if you do all the practices, 20 plus hours of track time.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a lot on a car.
Yeah. The poor car. I mean, it's a 20-year-old car. Like, that's the thing that anytime anyone complains about reliability related stuff, I'm like, it's a 20-year-old German sports car.
It's that.
And we just
have you said that this car is a E46 M3?
No. And that's what I was just about to ask for clarification. Yeah. That it's a E46 M3?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like 2000 okay. to 2006.
Yeah. I've always been, I had a friend in Louisiana that had one that when the Versa blew its first motor, he let me borrow his E46. That was STX prepped. Yeah. Cool. So that thing was pretty rowdy to drive around town on.
That's a good swap.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Shout out to Brad. He's a real one. Yeah.
Oh man.
Okay. So, I mean, so you guys, you knew your lineup, you knew what needed to happen. Were you going in the weekend, like saying like, we're going to shoot for podium?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to win. So I'll preface it with, this is going to sound the wrong way. I only like to go to the track if I feel like we're going to win. I don't really like to go admitting defeat. So there's a lot of work that goes into that. And the driver lineup's a big part of it. So we knew that we know our pace relative to the other cars that usually show up. And we know that if a couple of the drivers can kind of keep their, we don't have to be the fastest because it's an 8-hour race Saturday and Sunday, right? So you don't have to be the absolute fastest, but you can't be slow and you can't be off the pace of the leader. So we knew if we could stay basically on the same lap as the lead car, which we felt confident we could do, we would have a chance to win. And Sunday, we basically did that. The cards kind of fell away from us. But so Mitch and I talked a lot, and we were like, we're going to show up and win at VIR. And we did some testing beforehand at Barber, and the setup that we got kind of tuned. So we were pretty precise. Like, this is beyond the effort of like a just like showing up. Like, we know, you know, all the little details of how the car is set up and tweaks, you know, we're tracking all that kind of stuff. So it's, we felt pretty good showing up to VIR, and I thought we did okay, but
yeah. And I, that was something that I definitely noticed is that like you guys weren't talking about wild changes on the car that you were tweaking it. Like, you were talking about like minor tweaks to aero. You were talking about different tire usage and the sessions that those have had. I noticed when you were talking about switching springs out, we were talking about 50-pound increments was the ideal range that y'all were trying to shoot for. It wasn't like, oh, we're running 400 and we're thinking about maybe putting in 700-pound swings. This was like, we're running at 900. Maybe we should be at 850 for this track, you know?
Yeah.
So that, you know, definitely seemed like you guys have been doing your homework and your research on the car and logging data for it. So Friday was practice and qualifying. I met up with the guy. I picked Andrew and another one of the drivers up at the airport. We drove into Danville together, dropped you guys off at the hotel, and I went and stayed at the track.
Camped.
And Friday was practice qual. And it seemed like, for the most part, Friday, from my perspective, Friday seemed to go pretty good. Well, I mean,
first session. So right before the last race. So we normally do like full suspension rebuild every third race. So about every 50 to 60 hours track time.
So that's like wheel bearings, wheel studs, all the stuff in the suspension that moves.
Ball joints, control arms, et cetera, et cetera. Right.
So more like drivetrain even.
Yeah. Components. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not like just pretty
shocks and
springs. pretty heavy refresh, every like 50 to 60 hours track time. And then we had a wheel bearing go bad first session Friday that only had like 10 hours of track time on it. So that cost us what would have been the good early morning cool temp qualifying session when all the other cars did their fast times. So, and that kind of put us on, we were still, our schedule, there was five timed sessions, and our schedule that we were planning on only had us running four sessions. So we were still able to do the exact same schedule. It's just one session later. So when Andrew got in the car to do his fast quality laps, it was like 2 hours later in the day than when everyone else did their fast laps. And
what hurt us for setting a fast lap was that at the way the weather had been, for whatever reason, so cooler track temp is usually better for, at least in the summer, a cooler track temp is better for grip. Once the track gets super hot, it starts to lose grip. And IMSA was at the track the weekend before we were there and put down a bunch of, you know, rubber that's not necessarily compliant with the rubber that we have on our car.
Yeah.
And that's not a dynamic that I really thought about before the weekend. So the track was super, super slippery. And by the time we got out that Friday morning, like Mitch said, it was 2 hours after when we were hoping to set a qualifying time. The track was, it was like, you know, the way the temperature looked, it ramped up from like 70 degrees first thing in the morning. Like it was kind of cool when we got there. And then by 10 a.m., it was like the heat of the day almost already. It was like a really dramatic difference. So we unfortunately like got pretty compromised with the ability to like set up lap time to be close to the pole time.
Yeah.
Or the pole time. But the car that qualified on pole was ridiculously fast. I don't have any confidence that I could have matched it. So best would have been.
And we're talking about average lap times for, was it GP1? Mm-hmm. Was the class?
GP1.
The like top three, four, we're looking at sub 2 minute, 10 second laps.
Yeah.
And closer to like 205s.
Oh.
And that team you're talking about, they qualified at what, 202, 203?
204.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I think my best.
And you guys were just a few seconds behind. Yeah,
I think
right?
my best was a high 206 or a low 207.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly. It wasn't fast enough, but it was not a bad lap, I don't think, for the weather, for the, how hot the track was. But I think we would have been at a 205, probably maybe a mid 205. We still would have been second off then, but we would have been P2.
The track surface you're talking about, was there a lot of pilling going on over the weekend because of the previous event, or did it mostly get cleared up in the practice day?
Just like, you mean like the rubber?
All the OPR pulling out
and
piling up on the edges and stuff. Did that, cause I don't remember how VIR takes care of stuff. So I don't remember if they go through with like any kind of brush
or they,
jets or anything. They would
sweep the track every evening. So,
they do. Okay.
It wasn't awful.
It wasn't bad.
Okay. So most of the stuff from IMSA was probably cleared out on Friday from the cars getting on track.
Yeah. We probably cleared it out on Friday, and then we were, but at the same time, the IMSA rubber is a lot stickier than our rubber. So it probably is a little deeper in there. And that track's pretty old. I didn't realize how old that surface was. So the reason our setup wasn't quite right was because we came from Barber that has a 3-year-old surface to VIR, which has, I don't know how old it is, but it's a lot older. So we went from like
a
really smooth surface where a stiffer setup allows you to, you know, you can get away with a stiffer setup basically and take advantage of a stiffer car. You don't overwhelm the tires easily. Whereas at VIR, you went to the throttle with 250 horsepower, which is all we make. Run out of the corner and you touch the throttle and the back ends, swap it ends. So that was what necessitated that spring change and
setup
kind of approach.
Okay. So Saturday or Friday qual practice, you guys qualified, what was it, third or fourth for Saturday's race?
Third. Cause I was right behind the leader, right?
Okay. Yeah. That's what I wanted. Want to say
yes. Saturday we started third.
Yeah.
Okay. Friday night, is that when we went into town?
Yes.
Okay. We went to like the one half decent restaurant in Danville.
So good. I mean,
the food's actually pretty legit. there was some controversy over plate displacement values for the salads.
Oh, massive controversy.
We're all convinced that the medium and the large servings for their salads are the same size. They just do like a bowl and a plate difference between them. Yes. Yeah. It wasn't like a dollar difference. It was a lot of dollars.
Be careful. Yeah.
If you're watch your salad sizes. They'll get you.
Yeah. Yeah. Danville. Look, so I've been to, I don't even know anymore. Somewhere in the ballpark of like 30, 40 tracks now around the country, like track tracks, not like dirt tracks or something. And for the most part, like most tracks, the towns around them aren't that great. Some of them might just be like small, like the immediate town outside of Danville, like the very tiny one where the pizza place is it seems like a nice place. And I have zero complaints about that, but like there's literally like nothing there. There's some houses and a couple and like a restaurant. I don't even think there's a gas station,
no gas,
which doesn't make sense. So you have to drive 35 minutes to get to like the town with a Walmart, and Danville. And for all the towns with the Walmarts near tracks that I've been to, Danville is the worst. I hate it. I spend a ton of time there, and every time that I go to Danville, I just get so I'm so done with Danville every time I go there.
Yeah, Danville's the worst. I mean, I take it with a grain of salt if you're from Danville and you're listening to this. I'm sure there's
sorry guys.
From outside, I would all agree and be like, let me tell you why.
Yeah,
let's dive in.
Yeah. Yeah, John's got a great story as to why.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I want to go all the way through that, but I guess like the cliff notes is I was stuck in Danville the Thursday night pretty late because I was trying to find food, but Danville's terrible at food. So it took me an hour to get anything. And at that point, I was so fed up that a guy tried to mug me or something or like rob me or kidnap me. I don't know exactly what it was. But it came down to him like pulling on the door handle of the driver's door of my car, telling me to get out. And I was so pissed off at Danville, I just told him to go away. And that worked. I shooed a mugger away.
Just leave.
Just get away from me. And it worked. And it didn't dawn on me until I was out of Danville, that somebody was trying to harm me. But,
that poor guy, though, it's like he had no idea that it was like, I'm going to go try to mug this dude. And the dude that I pick is the guy that does competitive shooting events and is a
former
and was a power lifter.
Yeah.
Seems like a bad proposition. But
yeah, because like if he did get me out of the car, it's like, what do you want? What are you going to do? You can't move me. Yeah. I'm 300 pounds. I'm 6 foot, 300 pounds. Like, come on. if anybody's moving anybody, it's me moving you. And yeah, that was such a bizarre interaction. And like, I think I said to y'all before, like I have had like concealed carry permits in the past. And it's like, not that like I'm looking for trouble, but like if I was carrying, like that could have just gone like in a totally different direction.
Oh, yeah.
If that guy kept up, you know? So like, it's kind of like that part's like kind of like scary and just kind of like, whoa, you know, I'd have been doing a lot of paperwork that night. You know, so,
I'm like, where's John?
And like I said,
car.
Where the hell's our fueler? Oh, he got locked up. Yeah. It sounds like racing.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah. But not to, like I said, that kind of stuff is like, it's a huge responsibility. And I, you know, I always hope that I never, ever, ever have to use it. It's just like a first aid kit. I never want to use a first aid kit. You know, just to explain the mindset. But yeah, so Danville blows. I had a decent steak. I'll give them that. So that was Friday. Saturday was race one. Andrew was in the car to start off. And the car had an on the outlap.
Whoopsie.
We had an
oopsie. Yeah.
So
from what we've been able to figure out now, a brake line, you guys have like a quick disconnect setup on the brake lines, right?
Yeah. So just to kind of ease.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Ease to like make servicing the car easier, to make brake changes easier. We have dry brakes on the brake lines. I mean, like all the fancy, like if you could look, watch, you know, the Rolex or Le Mans or whatever, when they do a full brake caliper swap, you just break the line loose real quick. It takes 2 seconds, hook it back up, and life's good. Except sometimes it doesn't get hooked all the way back up.
Yeah. And so that, when that happens, in this case, it locked up a caliper. And we had, you had to get pulled in. It took us like what, 20 minutes to get it sorted out?
I would say. We lost 9 laps. So.
Yeah. But yeah, and that's the thing. So that's what, 18, 19 minutes. And you know, when you think about it, like you guys, we got the car towed into the garage, figured out the problem, fixed it, got the car all put back together with a new set of wheels and tires on it, and got it back out on track in 20 minutes. But that put the team into what, a 8-9 lap deficit, which you guys hung in there and made up for part of it, but that's a huge deficit to make up for. So, by the end of it, Saturday was finished out. What, mid pack for GP1?
Yeah, about fifth, I think.
No, was it fifth or fourth? I don't know. We only lost one lap to the leader. It's like when we finally got on track, we were 9 laps down at Checker on Saturday. Yeah. We were 10 laps down to the leader. So,
okay. That kind of data is encouraging.
Yeah.
We probably would have been a pretty confident P2 on Saturday, since the really car that ended up having trouble on Sunday didn't.
Yeah. So that, I mean, and that's just like part of racing.
Shit happens
sometimes, you know? But the ability to like scramble and get it fixed. I think the team did really well on that.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew was on the radio describing the issue. I knew that we had a couple minutes since he was getting towed in. So I went and talked to a couple people on pit road that are familiar with these cars. I'm like, hey, any ideas? We assumed it was something electrical. So that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to hook our scanner up, see what it says. Let's not mess with anything until that tells us something. So we don't, you know, start getting mixed signals. And you, John, were pretty spot on with, as I was messed with the scanner, you're like, hey, can I jack the car up? Can we at least do that? I'm like, yeah, go for it. Hey, can we take the wheels and tires off to just start taking a look? I'm like, yeah, go for it. And that's when you guys found the brake line that was loose. And like right at the same time that you guys saw that, the scanner had done what it was going to do and didn't show anything too alarming, I guess.
The part you guys missed, unless you're watching the live stream, was like, this was the back straight at VIR, and the car was acting funky, and Mitch had already, we'd already had a radio exchange about some ABS related lights on the dash and stuff, and so I was kind of attuned to it. So I'm trying to warm tires, I'm like left foot braking and jogging the car back and forth with foot heat in the tires, and all of a sudden like the front end just grabs, and I'm like, whoa, I didn't know I could brake the left and the right front differently somehow. The car is like, it like grabs to one side. I can't really tell which side it is, because I guess it was the right, thinking back on it. But I look behind the car and I smell tire smoke. I smell tire.
Yeah.
I look behind the car and it looks like the motor's blown up. But I know it's not the motor. I'm looking at the oil pressure and the oil.
Yeah, gauges say otherwise.
And it's like massive smoke show. Like, it looked like drifting. Like, it looked like a freaking Formula Drift event. And I'm at the very front of the line of cars. There's like 35 cars behind me that are just getting smoked. And I go all the way down the straightaway dragging the tire. Like, the tire's literally, right front tire's literally not moving. So it literally put a hole in the tire by the time I could get off the side of the track. It was a pretty funny situation. I was not in a good mood. But
that's interesting.
I heard on the live stream, because we had the live stream going in our pit spot before we really knew what was going on. And the announcers on the live stream were like, oh man, looks like someone lost their motor on the warm-up lap. Oh, that was just us with the locked up wheel.
So did they have video?
Yeah, they're
or just on
WRL does a pretty solid live stream on YouTube of the whole race. They've got.
I didn't notice or know about it.
Yeah, so and like you can go back and watch them. They have like they utilize all the track cameras, so you do have like
Okay.
Anyone that's broadcasting their live stream like from in-car, they key into that. So
that's clever. Levels of streaming quality, like not quite there, but it's good. It is 8 hours of.
Yeah,
that's a lot. So
it's a little different.
Okay, I'll have to go back and look at that.
It is pretty cool, though.
So yeah, and like what you were talking about, Mitch, of like you know trying to like get other things done while you're doing things because you're the chief mechanic. I think that's like one of the things. Like going back to like it takes a village is like. Not only do you need bodies there, but you need people there that are like, okay, we need a triage and we need to like get this rolling us and like, let's make this as efficient as possible.
Yeah.
And that's all I was trying to do was like, okay, I understand that you're doing a thing, but there's other things that need to get done that either we do them now or we do them later. And I'd rather them get done now.
No,
so we're not wasting any more time.
You were a rock star then. I mean, it's
thanks, man.
With the group of guys that we race with, there's
a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and they're not necessarily Michelin star chefs when it comes to mechanics. So you have to kind of mediate what you want them to do, and you know all that kind of stuff. So I didn't want any people to just
the NFL. Yeah.
But no, you did exactly what you should have and life was good.
Yeah. So beyond that, the car ran pretty it seemed like it ran pretty solid for Saturday. Finished that out. Saturday night we did gumbo at the track. While you guys worked on the car. We invited some of the other teams over. And I gotta say, for like a track event, that's probably the most gumbo that I've had people go through before. At an event, because it got pretty low. Like there wasn't much to give you guys for leftovers.
I only had two lunches worth of leftovers, so there wasn't a whole lot.
Okay. And that and we had talked about that before, like about how many people we thought we could feed. So I'm just glad that we were able to like, because there were some dudes that came over who like clearly had been wrenching for hours, that needed something inside them. So I was glad that I could have provided that. So Sunday's race. Qualifying for that is based on fastest lap from Saturday. So that put the team in P3 or P4?
I think we were fifth on time, but we got upgraded to fourth because one of the cars didn't start.
And I mean, Sunday seemed to just be rocking and rolling for the most part.
Sunday was pretty
solid. From my perspective, as far as like the car running and everything.
Yeah, I mean, Sunday
stops and everything.
Sunday went great. We have a driver on the team that will not drive in the rain, and it started to rain on Sunday, so we got to do an extra green flag pit stop to get him out of the car. Other than that, if it wasn't for that pit stop, we would have been, coulda, shoulda, woulda, but would have been... right there
on the heels of first,
if not them on our heels, if not them well behind our heels, but still.
And the team had one of the weirder, just that's racing. Just it is what it is. Bad luck moments that I've seen in the middle of a race. We were pulling the car in for a driver change and a refuel. The last one for the race, the track went red. As the driver was pulling into pit lane and they red flagged the entire field, all the cars are stopped
because
we can see our car like 400 yards away, just sitting there.
The red flag was not because of an incident. It wasn't, your normal.
It was
because VAR lost the timing loop. Their timing and scoring went down. So they had to stop the race because no one's laps were counting. And then
it's frustrating.
And it was less than an hour to go in an 8 hour race, and that happens, and that was definitely frustrating. Yeah. It's just like,
yeah.
So when this happens, can we just pull in and get this done? but they made the car go back out, do a pace lap, get the green flag, and then it could come in.
Yeah, to make our
second green flag. And I was just like, God dang.
So instead of us having a perfectly timed, you know, end of race pit stop under caution, we got to do a green flag stop with like 25 minutes remaining and zero chance of
It was so bad. And we had it all teed up. Like, you know, I was going to go in for the last stint, and we were confident, you know, the other car we were racing hadn't had much pace on us if any the whole day. So we
could
catch them on speed. And so that red really kind of screwed the pooch, because we were not even down a lap. I mean, we were like, it was like a 40-second gap, I think, 40-second gap, and there would have been like 45 minutes left. Had the red not happened, there would have been almost an hour left, and I would have had plenty of time to go catch them, but that kind of is how it is. But then when I got in the car, I realized that the car had zero horsepower. So there was some sort of issue that was going on, and the car is super slow. So it made me feel better about not catching the situation in general.
Yeah. So beyond all that, team still finished second, which I think is pretty rad considering like the size of the field. That's a pretty good
comp. Yeah. Good competition.
And I think that like a lot of the prep you guys did ahead of time went into that, you know, that definitely, I think, made a big difference on being able to get to that point. So, good job on that. Congrats on the second place. Thanks for letting me be a part of that. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the flawless pit stops.
Yeah.
You killed it.
I was trying, man.
I mean, seriously, every time, like, we've not had that good of a time before.
When in these 8-hour races, we do what, normally five, maybe sometimes six pit stops a race, filling up with the car with fuel every time. And we had zero issues, zero penalties, zero anything fueling wise. So
Well, I don't want to be that the guy to cause that.
I mean it is
that was my biggest thing. It was like, don't get a penalty.
WRL rightfully so is super super strict on fire bottle has to be in place before fuel goes over the wall, you know, full fire gear, visors down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, rightfully so, but it's super easy to forget something, you know, whatever.
And it's so easy to get a penalty.
Super easy.
Yeah, I remember talking to another driver that weekend. They're like, man, these rules are crazy. And I was like, look, man, coming from being an organizer, I'm going to tell you, most of these rules are definitely written in blood. Like, they're not just willy-nilly rules for the sake of it. It's because stuff there, every one of these rules probably has a story behind it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, and I mean,
so
getting caught on fire kind of sucks. So,
yeah, it's not really, it's not a good time, you know?
Yeah.
It's not fun.
So it makes sense. But no, you,
so VIR, you know, you guys have been there before, but after this, do you have any new thoughts on it or anything? Just, for the most part, I feel like VR is a pretty solid track as far as amenities and the track goes. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, I love VR. I mean, the racetrack is fantastic. Like, the flow of it is wonderful to drive. It's super fun. It's super high speed. I love everything about it. I think we learned a lot about the setup particularly for older track surfaces. So we've got a little bit more intelligence on that going into, you know, next year we'll probably be running a lot of these races again. I was just stoked to get so much seat time at VIR again. And there was a lot of on-track incidents for this race, and VIR is in particular, if you're listening to this and you're a motorsports person, VIR is always kind of every event I've ever heard of at VIR tends to, attract a lot of like hard-to-car contact because there's very few passing zones. It's a lot of single lane driving because it's super high speed, super flowy. There's a couple of key places where you need to get your passes done, and there's other places you really don't want to be side by side. And a lot of people, especially with multi-class racing, get kind of like just anxious and have to get by a car in front of them, and they cause really big crashes sometimes when they do that. So, but I mean, honestly, in my stints, I never saw any really awful driving. I mean, Mitch probably thinks differently because I was telling him on the radio how awful some of the drivers are, but everything's amplified 10 times.
Right? Seems so much more intense.
Yeah. I like going up there. I think it's a super fun racetrack, and Danville's a lovely little town. just kidding. Danville's not great.
Mitch, before you say anything about VR, just want to let you know that after this, we're going to have to shift gears and do a little bit of camping stuff. Because this is also a camping podcast. So just heads up on that.
Fully verified, you camped.
I did. Thank you. Some people try to say that I don't camp, India.
This is a camping podcast.
Yeah. Okay. See, I did camp. Mitch and thank I
camped
you.
At the Holiday Inn.
Offered you a hotel room. You declined.
That's true. He declined it.
I did. But it's like over an hour. It's like forever to get to the hotel. I didn't want to deal with all that. That's a hassle.
It's in the morning.
And Biscuitville's right next door, so that was a plus. Other than that, you made the right call.
Yeah. Mitch, did you have any extra thoughts about VR?
No, I love it. Didn't drive this year. Got to drive last year. It's super awesome racetrack. The facilities there are, it's not like you're staying at a, Ritz-Carlton or whatever, but super, nice place, everything you could want from a racetrack. I enjoy it. I'm happy to go back.
Cool. I like VIR too. I spent a good amount of time there and it's always been a pretty neat place. So like I said, we do have some camping things, that, we like to ask our guest no matter what, when they come on. So we have three questions. We would like to get your opinions on things. Okay. So the first question, I guess we'll start with Mitch on this one. What would be your ideal camping trip?
Oh man.
Like either destination or type of camping.
So last summer I did a 7-day rafting trip down the Green River in Utah. And that was like full blown camping. And it was,
That sounds awesome. We might have to, that's when you come back.
It would have made sense for us to talk about that while, we've spent days together, but so like
there's a lot to cover,
but that was pretty cool and happily do that again.
Okay. That sounds really cool. Was that like a group of people?
Yeah. So, some friends of mine I actually grew up in Colorado, some friends of mine that still live out there. Once a year do a big trip like that. And all the That's stars awesome. Aligned and got to go with them and floating down the river. And I mean, I guess it's camping. Like we didn't even set up tents and stuff. You just like throw a cot out and go to sleep.
That's definitely camping. Okay,
cool.
Was it guided or like, did y'all just like, we're going to
do this? I mean, like most of them at some point or another have been like professional raft guides. So I guess that counts, but
yeah.
Well, I mean like, did you guys pay somebody money?
We were
okay. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's wild.
There was like 8 or 9.
That's pretty neat. Cool. Andrew, what about camping for you?
The last time I went camping, I think I was a Cub Scout.
Or it could be like a dream camping trip. Like if you're like, oh, I wish I could go do this.
I'm a big time glamper, big fan of a glamping experience.
Okay. Fair enough.
So I don't know. So my wife and I have been talking about going to the Willamette Valley, which is in Oregon. It's where they make wine.
Okay.
It's not Napa Valley. It's a little less bougie than Napa Valley. So I would be super into a high-end glamping experience there. But also I daily drive the most reliable car ever made, a 2003 Land Rover Discovery. And, and it's the perfect overland.
Your poor wallet.
Probably the worst reliability reputation of any car sold in America.
Yeah.
But it's a great vehicle for the camping adventure because you have to do so much maintenance on it that everything's up to date. I'd love to turn it into like a landing rig one day. My brother lives in Colorado. He's about to move to Jackson Hole, to Jackson, Wyoming. So I'd love to, before he like moves away from there at some point, I'd love to go drive my disco out there and camp.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's not even planned. That'd be a good time. Yeah.
I'm not coming to rescue you if you crack another block in Wyoming.
This has rescued me before. Different car. Previous disco.
What was the current one? What was the minor difficulty that you had that caused the issue?
The cracked engine block.
Standard roadside maintenance stuff.
The cracking engine block.
All right. Question.
Okay. Disco
thing.
Question number two. We'll go with Andrew first. What is your dream car?
Oh, man. Living it. 2003 Land Rover Discovery.
Okay. Sweet. Well, all right.
Actually, I'm like the weird person that like I love driving race cars on the racetrack, and I'm a huge car person for sure. But my aspirations are not lofty as far as like cars that I'd like to own. Anything that's any Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin, or any old manually shifted Land Rover,
I would take. That'd be nice.
I'd love to have
that's pretty solid.
A V12 Vantage or a V8 Vantage Aston, but the ones you can get for like $40,000 would be awesome.
Okay.
That's
I like it.
That's all we got. I'm easy to please.
Mitch, what about you?
Man, you would think this is something that I would have like thought about or talked about or something before. I don't know. I have a 1997 Ford F-350 that needs like all the things to like actually keep it on the road and make it drivable. And so I really kind of think if that thing was just, you know,
mint.
Yeah, if it was like actually nice and not just as nice as the gas station pretend like it is when they say they want to buy it from me.
Yep.
That would probably make me pretty happy.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I was maybe talking to you about it over the weekend was that like one of the favorite vehicles I've ever owned and I would love to own again was a 90 Suburban.
Oh yeah. I think we talked
about that. With like, because it had the smoker windows and everything.
Yeah. I've like, got the vent windows and like they're awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I would absolutely love to have like a restored 90 Suburban with some little tweaks and stuff, and you know that would be.
Yes.
I would love that. Like, if I could have like a 3/4 one ton Suburban from that generation, I would. I'd be happy.
Yeah, block.
Yeah, frame. Well, not just the engine, but like to be able to actually tow stuff with it.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, I would love that. Like that would be really cool to me. So I definitely get what you're saying with that. You know, there's definitely something about like a solid truck that you just rely on and come to love.
Yeah.
So we have one more question. This is kind of a two-parter because we have to specify the settings. what is the best way to cook a hot dog? A, while camping or like tailgating or something, and B, while at home. And Andrew, wait, Mitch goes first.
Camping. What kind of camping are we doing? Because if you can have like a grate that goes over the fire, like that's still the way to go.
Sure.
But if you're running it
and
you just got to put it on a stick or whatever, then, you know, it gets the job done.
Yeah, well, you have like let's say like car camping.
Car camping, yeah. No, like so
you can pull.
Yeah, you get your fire set up, you know, burn it down a little bit, and throw your grill out over the fire and go to town.
Okay, and then at home in a kitchen setting.
At our house, we actually. So we don't have an oven, so I set up our grill and our so we could like make food at home
every day.
And then something was wrong with our gas pressure regulator. I don't know. I'm not a plumber. And so I put a regulator on it, and now our grill only gets up to like 250 degrees, so we don't even really have a grill. But we do. We do have an air fryer, and you can actually cook a hot dog in an air fryer.
Okay. Really? Okay. You're not the first one to
maybe,
say this.
Maybe it's not actually the best, but in my situation, that's really all we
don't have an oven or anything else to cook with.
No.
We have
I'm kind of afraid to ask why you don't have an oven.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to go there.
Okay.
That'll be in the follow-up episode. Long story.
Okay. All right. So, Andrew, camping setting, best way to cook a hot dog.
Best way to cook a hot dog. Oh man, I'm a big fan of just putting anything on a stick over a fire. That's a great way.
Okay.
Even with the ashes and stuff on it, I'll eat it. Not a big deal. Bun a little bit. Probably burn some of my skin off in the process. That sounds like a good time. And I've, at this point, I've had like 10 beers, so that hot dog's gonna be delicious.
Then it really doesn't matter.
That sounds great. At home, I'll tell you how I won't cook a hot dog, and I will not boil a hot dog in water like that.
What? Come on.
I had a roommate in high school who boil it in beer.
No, like
I had
it's a thing. Yeah,
it is a good
beer brat.
Think about that. I had a roommate in college who, at the time, I didn't know he was a huge stoner. Turns out he's huge, just like smoking weed constantly. And it got to the point where, like, the house was like, it was like walking through a smoke machine. And he was still like surprised when we found out. He's like, "You guys know I smoke weed?" We're like, "Yeah, dude, the whole house is."
Yeah.
But he was telling me it was like a really, it was kind of a sad conversation, but also funny. And in the same conversation, he told me about how you can take a granola bar, like a Nature Valley granola bar, and crumble it up and put it in a bowl and pour milk over it. And it's just like granola cereal. And I was like,
I don't hate that idea.
It's delicious, but I was like, dude, you literally know you can, like, that's what granola in the bag is. That's like,
yeah, you don't have to go through all the trouble.
It's already crumbled up for you.
Yeah, it's already crumbled. And then
it's probably cheaper.
And then he showed me his lunch, and his lunch was it was a hot dog on a bun in the microwave for like. I won't cook either. I'm not a big boiler. I'm not a big microwave hot dog guy.
Okay.
But I'll grill a hot dog on my grill, no problem.
Okay.
On the stove. I cook brats on the stove all the time.
Okay. Yeah, so those are the three questions that we ask everybody. I think you guys had some pretty solid responses. We like them. If you guys come back around, we have another tier of, like, second appearance questions that you'll have to answer.
Do they involve hot dogs?
Yeah, they probably, if I remember correctly, they do. They just kind of go more further into absurdity, you know. I think Blair's currently in tier three, if I remember correctly. Evan and Blair. So,
your own hot
dog. Anyways, yeah. Anyways, we really appreciate you guys, spending time with me to come on and talk on the show and kind of share your experiences. In racing and outside of racing. It's been great to have you guys on. Do you guys have any extra thoughts or last words?
If you want to come race in WRL, reach out to me or Mitch and we'll hook you up.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you. We're going to be renting seats in our car next year. So if you're interested in a lot of seat time, I'd say the value is high. It's expensive, but you're going to get a ton of driving time.
The cost of like, per hour is pretty good.
Yes, compared to
club racing, when you calculated like
that. Yeah, to sprint racing, it's exceptionally good. But it is a big chunk. It's more than you're going to pay to go race your own car for a weekend. But it's an arrive and drive experience with a lot of perks, and you can sit there and talk about and we'll cook hot dogs for you.
And with that kind of setup, like if you think like you're a solid driver and like. If only you had a good car and team to match that, then doing something like that is might be the way to go for
you.
To see that come to be. Yeah.
In my experience.
And then also, not just wheel to wheel, but if you want to try and improve your driving, just track days, HPD, time trials, Apex Pro is a really great tool to use for that. And Andrew, do you only do on-site coaching or do you do remote coaching as
well?
I'll
do remote coaching.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, I'll do remote coaching. I've scaled it back a little bit because at one point I was doing a lot of it, but I will, if you reach out to me and you're very nice, I'm happy to look at your data remotely.
Do you have any coaches that use Apex Pro to teach in their areas?
Absolutely. There's a bunch of coaches that know how to use the Apex Pro device, but the guys that I would recommend, one, Tom O'Gorman, he actually has like a little, I give him a little suitcase of Apex Pros that he has.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
So if you're at the track with Tom, he can help you. And another guy in the grid life world is Scott Robertson. Cool okay. dude. Solid yep. driver. I've raced with him a bunch, but he's excellent at coaching and looking at data. So either of those guys, Robertson Racing, they're GLT.
Okay. Yeah. And Tomo is currently affiliated with
ASM.
What's the team? Yep, ASM. Yep. And from what I understand, they're another solid group of guys.
Absolutely.
And Tomo kind of had formally started doing like a whole coaching program this year.
Yeah.
So any event that he's at, definitely a guy you want to hit up if you want to go faster. Absolutely. And I can pretty much guarantee that like if you go to Tomo, unless you're like one of the great drivers out there, like if you go to Tomo, he's going to get you pointed in a way to get you going faster if you're both at track.
He has like a sixth sense of lap time.
Yeah. And it's freaky in how he can just hop in anybody's car and turn out faster laps than them.
Freaky is a good way to describe it.
Like it's because it's like part of it requires like a huge amount of trust in that other person's car, you know, and then just his own ability to like remember what the track is. So like that's always very impressive. Birmingham Road and Race would be the company to look up for seat rentals.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Beham Road and Race on Instagram.
Yeah. Do you have any other socials you want to plug?
Mainly just that one, Beham Road and Race. And you'll see, Mitch is MCR something on, Instagram, MCR.
9498.
Okay. I tag Mitch and everything. Cause Mitch is not super social media savvy. So I try to make it seem like Mitch is like,
okay,
social media god that everyone needs to know about.
And I'll be sure to tag you guys in our episode post, try and get some traffic your way. Again, really appreciate you guys coming on. We did an intro, we have to do an outro. Are you gonna do it again, Andrew?
Ba-na. Wait, is that the right tone?
No, that's 10 tenths.
Oh man, wait, how does it go? Remind me one more time.
That was pretty solid, dude.
I'm feeling
impressive.
Feeling the vibe.
All right. Well, keep it campy, guys. Thanks for listening. Check us out on the internet.